Enjoying Maine is our talkback assignment for this day. The enjoyment is bound to be heightened as today's guest is the author of the book of the same name, Mr. Bill Caldwell, whose column appears regularly in the pages of the Gannett Publications. We're about to discuss the book, which is a reprint of many of the popular pieces which Bill has authored over a period of time. For this session, listeners are invited to call in with comment or question relative to the discipline required in writing an essay with regularity, with a deadline in mind, or perhaps hearken to some of the specific columns which are a part and parcel of the book's content. In order to join this dialogue, our favorite number is at your beck and call. 623-3878 is the number to call, and you can call at any time without the need of having to give your name. At this point, our pre-introduction comes to a halt as we pause momentarily to consider other matters. This is the first-time appearance for Bill Caldwell on our talkback forum, although the program has entertained other Gannett writers, including Jean Letourneau and Marge Standish. This morning's object, a discussion of Enjoying Maine, the recent Gannett publication and reprint of many of Bill's previously published newspaper columns. Again, for calling-in purposes, listeners are invited to join the fray by giving us a call here at 623-3878. You can call at any time. There is no need to know your name. Bill Caldwell, is there a special feeling with you whenever that printed word from your home or office typewriter suddenly gets on paper, and then next thing you know, the newspaper column or the book, the hardbound covers, you see it in printed style?
Oh, sure. There is a very mixed emotion about the whole thing. First of all, you're very glad to see it in print. And I'm afraid that every newspaper writer picks up the paper and the first thing he reads is what he wrote for the paper. And you get some pretty mixed emotions then. Sometimes you're pleased with it. More often you're saying, how could I have said that? Or couldn't I have said that better? Or why did they cut this paragraph? When you get it into inside a book, the big problem there is really what you left out. In other words, what I'm trying to say, and you must have it in your business too, is that a writer's job is a very lonely one. You're sitting there at a typewriter with a piece of paper, and you have to judge whether this is the right way to tell the story. And very often I'll throw a lot of leads off into the waste paper basket. And finally you decide that this is the one, and you stay with it. And nobody really knows if you didn't throw the best ones into the waste paper basket. Yeah.
So what you're really, in a sense, saying that after it does hit the press and it does make the public, that it becomes an object for self-criticism on your part.
Yes, I guess so. I guess self-criticism is perhaps a little more pompous way of putting it than I would, but you look at it and you think to yourself sometimes, that's a nifty column, I like that one. Uh-huh. But more often you see the holes in it.
In putting this book together, which is a grouping of all kinds of columns that you've done over a long period of time, was there any special object that you had in mind? Did you go about it from the standpoint of saying, well, this was a better one than this one here, I'm trying to put all the good ones together?
No, I guess it was something quite different from that. The person who suggested this book was our publisher, our president down there, Jean Gannett Hawley. And right after I started these columns, she said, you ought to do a book on them. And when it got time to do the book, I suddenly realized that there were 1,000 or so of these columns around. And what do you do? How do you pick them? And our house turned out to be a dreadful mess for a while because I had old columns scattered all around. And out of 1,000, we eventually picked about 80. And the same with pictures. So the problem was, how do you organize it? And looking at it from the question of enjoying Maine, this began to be the guideline, not whether it was a good column or not, but it was
usually really, as a theme, right?
Yeah, really enjoying Maine. So what we tried to do was to look around Maine, and we divided them up. I was going to write about living in small towns, or the fishermen along the coast, or the North Woods, or the weather in Maine, and so forth. And once we got that kind of grouping that we wanted, then you began to look for columns that fitted into the North Woods or one that were around the islands. Mm-hmm. And as you got down into the shorter strokes on this, you realized you could only have maybe 8 or 10 for each section. And so you wanted to get variety in those 8 or 10. Now, whether we ever picked the right ones or the wrong ones, who can tell?
I think the approach was fantastic. I suppose this hits every reader in a different way. To me, some of the most enjoyable pieces in here were those of personality sketches you did of people. For instance, Judge Robert Williamson is an example of the kind of thing. You seem to have a great deal of feeling as to this gentleman
whom we, any of us who had ever come in contact with him, recognized him, and it was a difficult thing to really kind of put into words. Yet I thought that you brought out many of the qualities about the judge that many people would like to have been able to voice or to put on paper, and no one else was able to do it.
Well, thank you for saying those nice things about that piece, but of course the credit for any piece really belongs mostly with the person you're writing about. Because a writer is nothing more than a kind of a mirror, if you want. And it was these qualities in the Chief Justice that had always attracted me to him tremendously. And somehow the piece wrote itself. The man had these particularly human and endearing qualities. And if I was able to capture them, this is a writer's technique, but what makes the column alive is the man.
Mm-hmm. So you had a good subject to work
That's
with.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, I think this holds true. 90% of all these columns are about people, and it seems to me that in Maine, be it along the coast or in the backwoods or in the Supreme Court, that there are more interesting people in Maine per capita than anywhere else. Well, by that I mean, if you take 10 people in Maine, 8 out of them are going to be fascinating. If you take 10 people in Washington, 8 out of them are going to be boring.
Why is it, though? Why is it in the state of Maine? Do you suppose it's because of the lifestyle, that which we are hooked with, in a sense?
Yeah, I think it's the lifestyle, which means, I suppose, the surroundings, the climate, the scenery, the kind of place you grew up in. There is not much pretense in Maine, and I think this is the real thing. People either don't pretend to be something they're not, or if they do pretend, everybody else sees through it. And so they quit doing it. So they're themselves. They're realer people.
Basic honesty.
Yeah, all right, basic honesty. Mm-hmm. With themselves and with everybody else.
Yeah.
And that you don't find in New York or Washington.
A lot of phoniness is what you're saying in other places then. Of course, you know you've lived in other places, haven't you, huh?
Gypsy. Yeah, that's right.
We got somebody on the line here. Let me remind our listeners, we are talking about Enjoying Maine. Bill Caldwell is our guest of the morning. The telephone number is 623-3878. Good morning.
Yes. Your book is just wonderful, Mr. Caldwell.
Thank
you. I did want to mention, if it would be wise for you to tell the listeners, of how you described our Maine lumberman and compared to the Western cowboy. Could you do that?
Well, I'll try and remember that piece.
It's excellent. It really was.
Well, you know, I've always felt that television and radio have made too much of the Wild West and the old sheriff and the Western town and the bad man. And I'm tired of those characters and I'm tired of that scenery. And really, they weren't a very important part of this country. But you turn around to the Maine woods, and the Maine lumbermen, and the people who cut that timber out of there, which built half the country. You talk about the rivermen who brought those logs down, and here you have the beginning of the nation. Here you have better scenery, more interesting people, tougher jobs, and just as many bad men, and a few good men, too. And they're much more alive than any other part of the nation. So I'd like to see a lot more tribute paid to the Maine lumbermen and the Maine rivermen as the essence of America rather than the Western cowboy.
And I think your readers would enjoy that part particularly. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for calling again. Our telephone number is 623-3878. I'm glad you responded in that way, and I enjoyed that particular column, too. I had oftentimes, even before your column came out, had thought about this, that we had gone into this whole smear of operations where we did eulogize through Western movies and so forth. And I, too, had thought about the Maine lumberman as being probably basic to many of the things that had happened in this nation. Why weren't they supported to a greater extent?
Well, I tell you one of the reasons, I think. I had thought about a television series or based on these things. And one of the reasons that never got to the air is that it's very easy to take your cameras out into the flat, sunlit Western plains.
Yes.
And it's very hard to get up into the Maine backwoods and rivers with the difficulty of terrain and the hazards of weather.
Uh-huh.
And so it is just a question of camera light.
You could very well be the part of the answer. Let me again remind our listeners, we are talking about Enjoying Maine. Our lines are available to you. Our guest of the morning, Bill Caldwell, the author of the book Enjoying Maine, which is a complete collection of all of the columns which he has done over a period of time for the Gannett Papers. We're going to take a brief pause in the show here, reminding you again, 623-3878 is the number, and we'll be right back. Our program this morning with Bill Caldwell, Enjoying Maine, is the theme of our program. It's also the title of his book, a collection of all of the columns which have been put together in very unique style. 623-3878, any of you who wish to join us in conversation with question or comment. 623-3878, let's go to the line. Good morning.
Good morning,
Bill. This is the old-timer. This is a gentleman you should meet. He'd be a good subject for you, Bill.
I've heard him on the air.
Well, I'd like to meet him sometime.
Well, that'd be nice. I'd like that.
But I just wondering, don't you think in our state of Maine that they're devoiding us for some reason or other?
They're what, did you say?
The other states are devoiding us.
They're avoiding us?
Yes. They don't...
I don't know.
they don't ever come up in the wintertime. They come up in the summertime, good deer, but they don't see the sun in the winter. When all the snow and all the logging is done.
Well, I guess that you're right there, that a tremendous amount more people who come up to Maine in the summertime. But from what I understand, the number of visitors to Maine during the fall and the winter are increasing all the time.
Yes, I noticed they have a little bit, but the old-fashioned logging is what they ought to see.
Well, that's for sure. That's getting a little harder to see, but I agree with you very much. If I had my druthers on this thing, you know, in many ways I think Maine is more beautiful in the deep winters.
Oh, I do, too. I have only 5 or 6 feet of snow up here every winter, and I'm on my snowshoes every day, and Norm will tell you that. But, Norm, I'm going to ask you something.
Go ahead.
Why is it we don't ever hear the good old-fashioned State of Maine Stein song anymore?
The Stein song?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. We'll have to revive it, bring it back as number one.
Well, it should be brought back because they don't ever play it number one.
Would you like to hear Rudy Valley singing it one of these days?
Right.
All right, I'll bring in a copy. I've got a mint conditioned copy of the old Rudy Valley Stein song. We'll bring it in and play it one day.
Well, thank you. I'll see you all later.
Okay, thank you for calling, old-timer. 623-3878 is our telephone number. And again, the lines are open to any of you who want to join Bill Caldwell in conversation here this morning. It's all concerning his book, Enjoying Maine, which has just recently come off the press. Bill, I did mention in the very beginning, a deadline is always kind of facing you. How do you work your columns? Is this a matter of inspiration? I'm sure that there must be a frustration. I know personally that there could be because of being just involved to a certain extent in this thing, of putting something together, and what are you going to do the next time? And try to work in advance, maybe.
Well, you don't wait around for any inspiration, I can tell you that, because you've got to meet a deadline. And the way I usually work on this is I prefer to work very early in the morning. I like to get up around 5, and I start working then. And if I can get a column or two done by, or a column done by 7:30 or 8 o'clock, this is, you know, uninterrupted. It's the best time of day. I like the very early morning. I don't really work very far in advance. Sometimes I feel full of virtue because I got 2 or 3 columns in the bank, as they call it. But then I take a breather and suddenly those are gone. So you're always running to keep where you to keep up. Because you have 3 a week, and that takes, I write maybe a couple of days in advance is about all, or maybe a week.
Do people often suggest to you things that are good for follow-up?
Oh, yes, yes. You know, a tremendous amount of column ideas come from readers or from people that you meet. And it's not a question of ever being barren of ideas, because all you got to do is walk around the state of Maine and you can find themes for 10 columns every day. The question is which one to pick.
You've been doing a lot of sailing this year, or motorboating. I don't know where you're around the coast, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I try and do that every year. You know, we got a boat down there. We came up to Maine 12 years ago, I guess, and bought a little skiff. And then we got a lobster boat. Now I got a little more comfortable cruising boat. And I try with my wife to be out on it every weekend. And we go off cruising the coast a couple of times a year for 10 days or 2 weeks at a time. And I use the boat as an office. I write a lot from it. And it's a small, unpretentious little boat.
But, boy, the way to see Maine in many ways is from the water. There you really see the coast.
Actually, you did exactly what a lot of people are doing today. Those people that we hear about coming to the state of Maine and relocating here, you were in the big city and decided at one point that you were going to throw the whole thing away and come up here, right?
Well, yes, but don't give me much credit for it, because it was my kids.
The influence of the family.
That's right. We were up here one summer, and it got to be the end of the summer. And my kids said, we don't want to go back to New York, which is where I was working then. We don't want to go back to live there. We don't go back to those schools there. We want to go to Lincoln Academy here in Damascotta, Newcastle area, and we want to live here in Maine. And they were about 13 or 14, and Barbara and I talked it over all night, and those kids were right, we decided. And so they were really the instigators of the move.
What about this transitionary period? I mean, you certainly you had to give up your job, whatever you were doing in New York at the time.
Sure.
With the connections, was this difficult to establish, to find yourself something that was going to be an ability for you to earn a livelihood?
Yeah, sure. It's a difficult move. You've got to fish a cut bait on this stuff. You can't say you want to come up to Maine and expect to move up here and move right away into some kind of a job such as you had in the major cities. If you're going to come up, you come up and try as best you can to establish yourself. And as I say in this book, it wasn't too easy to begin with. I was then, I suppose, around 40 years old or 45 or something like that. And I started in a job that was paying me a little less money than I'd be making when I was 20. But all of that changed in a few years, and I don't regret it one bit. It was the smartest move I've ever made, and you're going to get me out of the state of Maine in a pine box, and that's the only way.
One of the very interesting reports was the building of your house down there. From the way you recounted this, it would seem to me that it was a long and arduous task. You thought it would never, never come to an end.
Well, that's the way, I guess, everybody, when you're just building a house, you think it'll never get finished. We had no intention of building a house in Maine because there are so many beautiful houses in Maine. Lovely old ship captains' houses with beautiful views, but those are never for sale. So finally we found some land that had the views of the water that we wanted, and we had to build. And what to build? Well, we got two ping pong tables in a house we were renting, put them up in an empty room, and on one ping pong table we put out all the clippings from various magazines of houses that we liked. And on the other ping pong table, we drew up plans. And finally, we designed six or seven houses, Barbara and I, through a winter. And the seventh house was just the same as the first house, almost. So we knew really that was become full cycle. And so then we went to work. And when the building started, we were living only a mile away. So we were there morning and evening. We'd come down in the evenings and look at what had been done and walk through this skeleton of a house with flashlights and change our mind and drive the builders nuts by changing the plans.
Yeah.
And so it seemed endless, but really it only took about 6 months.
Megan, remind our listeners that Enjoying Maine is our conversation for the day with our guest of the day, Bill Caldwell, the author of the book, which contains a whole collection of his columns published previously in the Gannett publication. 623-3878 is the telephone number. Any of you who'd like to join us in conversation, ask Bill some questions or make some comment, the lines are all available to you. We take a brief break. We'll be right back. Our program again with Bill Caldwell, Enjoying Maine, is our theme of conversation. 623-3878 is the telephone number. Bill, a lot of your activity, of course, is primarily concerned, I would suppose, with central and southern Maine and such. Do you ever get up into the far north for any great expeditions and to bring back columns and ideas?
Well, I love going up to the north, and I like it particularly in the wintertime. Jake Day, who's a neighbor of mine in Damascotta, was the first man to take me up into the North Woods. And Jake has a group called Jake's Rangers, which are people from that area who go up and hunt and fish up there several times a year. And he took me up there first to stay with Chubb Foster on Mattagammon Lake, which is the other side of Patton. And that was my first introduction to the woods, and from there I went to the logging camps and so forth. And I really love getting up into the woods there. And it's sometimes difficult to persuade my editors that I should go that far away and
spend that much time up there and call it work. But I try to do it once a year.
You like it as a really an excuse to get up there, but then also, you know, who can tell what may develop from the...
Oh, there's always a tremendous amount of copy up there. This is the best thing about this job, you know, is that you can go everywhere and anywhere around the state of Maine and write about it and have a wonderful time meeting the people and seeing the places, and this is all line of duty.
Yeah. Bill, you've had plenty of opportunity now in order to really get the feeling as to the way people think in the state of Maine. I'm just wondering, since this past week we've been talking about Maine's future on this program, what do you envision is possibly going to happen? Are we going to have a great influx of people from the outside? Is the whole complexion, the whole tenor of the state of Maine, as we have traditionally known it, going to change because of this?
No, I really don't think so. Sure, there's going to be an influx from the outside. And there's nothing wrong with this. This is all one nation, and people get itchy feet, and you can't blame them for wanting to come to Maine because it's the best spot in the nation. So we're going to get them coming in here at a fairly steady pace, but we won't be swamped by them, either in numbers or in ideas. You must remember that Maine has always been exposed to a tremendous influx of people from other nations, other countries. When we were the shipping capital of the world, it was coming and going all the time. And Maine can digest all these different people, can digest their different ideas, and still take the best of them and make it Maine-ish.
Do you feel that the Maine character, however, is going to change as a result of this from what we have traditionally accepted as being the Maine character, if there's any such thing?
Well, I think there is a character, if you want to call it. I think it's really a set of values, a realistic set of values without pretense. And I think it'll last not because it's Maine, but because it's right, because it's good. And these are the things that tempt people to come up here. And I think that we'll take the best of what they have to offer and combine it with the best that is already in Maine. And it'll change, but imperceptibly.
Coming back to your book momentarily, it hasn't been off the press too long. I'm wondering how the sales are going today.
I'm delighted to tell you the sales are just terrific. I think it's broken off most of the sales records that have ever existed in the state. It's been going very, very well. It's in all the bookstores. And now the track record here has been so good that it is now moving out now into all the eastern seaboard. And from there we'll go west. And I think the actual figures I saw the other day was in about the first 30 days it had done somewhat over 3,000 copies in the state of Maine alone. And the publishers tell me that if you do 10,000 copies in the whole nation, you're on the bestseller list. So if in one state we can do three, we're doing fine.
This is an unusual combination, though, isn't it, that a newspaper corporation as such is in the book business? Because generally you think in terms of book publishers being book publishers, not newspaper publishers.
Well, you're right, except that this is changing. There are many... newspapers who are into the book publishing business now. Out on the West Coast, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Gannett, and a number of others. And
the whole idea of the conglomerate?
No, I think it's slightly different. It is that if you are in the business of publishing, presumably, if you're a successful newspaper, you're publishing what people want to read. Presumably, if you're an acceptable newspaper, you've got some good writers. So why don't you take this know-how and translate some of it into book form as well as newspaper form? And this is, I think, what the newspaper is doing. And it seems to be successful.
Yeah. Well, Bill, it's an interesting book. It certainly is a lot of great reading. One of the points that you made out is that it's one of the books you don't have to read right through. You can put it aside. And,
yeah, 5-10 minutes is fine. Yeah.
Wake up in the morning at 5:30, you can't go to sleep. Just pick up a chapter where you left off, and it's great. Thank you very much for coming in and being my guest this morning.
Enjoyed it very much.
Great. Tomorrow we'll be back. Our show tomorrow will have to do with a little wheeling and dealing. Our swap shop will be in operation. So all of you swap shoppers out there that we didn't hear from today, you'll have an opportunity tomorrow to come in and make a good deal. Tomorrow at 9:30. WFAU.